Thank you for joining us for this conversation today on The Sword and the Trowel. Today, Pastor David and I talk with Pastor Seth Tweeddale about local politics and how the church can be involved with that on the county level, the city level, and the state level as well. I hope it's a helpful conversation for you. Take a listen. Welcome to The Sword and the Trowel. The Sword and the Trowel is a podcast of Founders Ministries, and Founders exists for the recovery of the gospel and the reformation of local churches. My name is Graham Gundon, and today I am joined by a good friend of the podcast and Founders Ministries, Pastor David Mitzenmacher, who pastors Grace Baptist Church with me and Tom. Tom is out of town today. He is training pastors up in Kentucky with Michael Clary and Michael Foster. So David has been kind to join us today, and we are also joined by Pastor Seth Tweeddale, from Ormond Beach, Florida. But before we get into all that, this episode is brought to you by Yonder Child and by Lake Yale Baptist Conference Center, two great organizations that have come alongside us in the ministry that we do here. So I'd encourage you to go check them out. Welcome, Pastor Seth, to the podcast. This is your first time with us. And Seth is pastor of Grace Community Church in Ormond Beach, Florida. And he's also the Florida State Faith Director for Citizens Defending Freedom. And you're involved with a lot of different other organizations as well, mostly regarding politics, especially local politics, faith, and freedom as well. We're glad to have you on the podcast.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah. So you and I got connected. Well, we've known each other for a few years. Met you at Founders Conference a few years back, but especially recently got connected because you were involved in an initiative down here in Lee County, which is a good, what, like 4.5, 5-hour drive from where you actually live. But you're involved in a political initiative down here. And so you called the church office and asked if one of our pastors would want to be involved in that political initiative in Lee County. And we said, yes, we do want to be involved in that. So can you tell us a little bit about what that was and then some of the work that you've been involved in the state of Florida locally?
Awesome. Yeah. So, what we've been pushing, I've been working with Daniel Bernard, Somebody Cares Tampa Bay, a bunch of other organizations to really get the goal to get churches on board with within the public square and just develop relationships with their local magistrates. And the on-ramp that we've been using is getting these proclamations done in June. So over 7 states have recognized June as some type of family month, but we had Faith Family Month in the state of Florida, signed by a proclamation signed by Ron DeSantis. And just in 2022, DeSantis also signed another one called Responsible Fatherhood Month. We've been getting as many counties and cities on board as we can to recognize June as Faith, Family, and Responsible Fatherhood Month. And Lee County was one of them. And the goal being, you know, once I get a mayor or a county to sign on, I get to work trying to call as many local churches as I can to have them show up at a city council or a county commission, really as a lightning rod to develop a ministry with their magistrates and develop relationships. For the past about 2 years, I've worked with Charlie Kirk, and Charlie always said, as the church goes, so goes the nation, and as the pastor goes, so goes the churches. So the nation that we're seeing is kind of fallen by the wayside, and you see the West falling everywhere. All these churches have become corpses where these adult dance studios are coming in and mosques are coming in, and it really shows that the church is to be the conscience of the nation, the conscience of the city, and the conscience of the county. And as your conscience is silent and seared, a lot of sinful things can happen. So what we've been doing with these Faith, Family, Responsible Fatherhood proclamations is just giving the church an easy on-ramp to get involved and to develop relationships, because our lives run out of relationships, and relationships run at the speed of trust. And the easiest stepping point is for a mayor to say, hey, we want your churches to come. We want your pastors to come and speak with us. And hopefully that's going to be a way that we can start moving forward. So we've gotten close to 30 different proclamations in the state of Florida alone, 20 or so in Texas, and New Mexico's going on, Virginia, and quite a few other states are jumping on with different Faith and Family Month or Responsible Fatherhood Month or proclamations that are going on. And, there's a fatherhood crisis going on right now. So there's a reason that we're having Faith, Family, Responsible Fatherhood, and these things proclaimed in the public square, because we become what we proclaim. We become what we celebrate. Mm-hmm. We act out of our identity. And when we're declaring our identity as public, it's really just a didactic catechism of the nation, a catechism of the county, and a catechism of the city that the magistrates are saying, act like this. This is what you are to be like. And when I think of the fatherhood crisis going on, nearly 4 in 10 Florida children live in single parent households. We have 1 in 4 American children live without a father in the home. That's almost 3 times the global average. Mm. So we have a huge crisis on our hands, 40% of births occurring outside of marriage and so on, you know. So seeing pastors like you grab hold, seeing your church grab hold and other churches, I think I've gotten close to 50 pastors come to their first county commission meeting or city council meeting and speak up and develop these relationships. So I'm praying that the Lord starts to be able to use this fruit, you know. It's so encouraging to see pastors jump on board and develop this ministry to magistrates, this cultural mandate that we've laid by the wayside for so long.
Yeah, and just speaking from experience, I mean, it was an incredibly easy off-ramp. I mean, you did all the legwork. You just said, hey, they're making this proclamation at the Lee County Commissioners meeting. Just can you go, and they want you to receive it and say a few words. And I went, and I said a few words, and it was great. I mean, I had an opportunity to preach the gospel, to speak the truth of God, to proclaim God's law there as well, and to give a heartfelt thank you to the county commissioners who were willing to make this proclamation that, David, as you said earlier, it was not just a broad faith-based thing, but it explicitly names the Christian religion as vital to who we are as a people, as a government, as a civil organization. It was an incredibly easy thing to do. It was well worth our time as a church. What did it look like? I mean, the mechanism of getting this before, you know, different mayors and city councils and county commissioners. How does that work?
You know, in most ministry, the name of the game is just show up, you know. I had a couple pastors come to the abortion clinic for the first time, you know, and just show up. And we've been not flexing this cultural mandate muscle that the church is supposed to have for so long that many pastors are bored and tired and, you know, just looking for a way out. So many pastors are leaving the ministry because it's just become monotonous. And so it really just takes an email or a phone call. Just reach out to your county commission, your city council, and really the big gap in this public square is why Citizens Defending Freedom got us started in the first place is when people go from uninformed to informed about their duty in the public square, the two questions that they have is how do I do it? And then what happens if it goes wrong? And so we have a legal team with Citizens Defending Freedom that will protect your rights for free. And then we also, you know, help grab you by the hand and just connect you with your magistrates and start showing how to do it. And so it really just was that, just reaching out. And then the hardest part wasn't getting the magistrates on board, because they're begging the church to step in. They're begging. They can't even find a pastor to come and pray to open up the city council meeting. So they're having to pray by themselves. Not one Christian will show up and even just sit there and find out what's going on in their city. Mm. So the magistrates are begging for it. But the hardest part is calling pastors and churches saying, hey, your mayor wants you to read the Bible in front of everyone. Your mayor wants you to preach the gospel in front of everyone. He's begging for you to come and at least pray in the public square. So it really just the first step is probably the hardest, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned, you know, so much of ministry is just showing up, and so much of politics, especially local politics, is just showing up. You know, most city council meetings are dominated by a very small group of people. And you think about so many cities, townships across this country, and the size of the church, the universal church in those polities, and the ability to really influence the conversation, and not just generically, but as Christians, it's this huge responsibility and this huge opportunity that I think these types of easy on-ramps just make it so easy for maybe pastors who still are working out of a general fear of getting involved in anything political. And now maybe they're realizing, well, actually, no, it really is true that Christ is Lord over everything, including politics. But how do I do this? Mm-hmm. And I think naturally, so often, you know, our thoughts go to the federal level. Our thoughts go to the national level. It's like, well, what could I do? But then you go to the local level and it's like, oh, you could actually do a lot just by being in the room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was struck when I delivered my speech, receiving the proclamation from the county commissioners. I mean, how attentive each of the county commissioners were to what I was actually saying. And then, you know, I looked at some of the video later and people around me, I mean, there must have been 50, 70 people in the room, how attentive they were and what an opportunity that is. And, you know, a rabbi stood up and gave the invocation. And didn't really pray. I don't know what you would have called it, but gave the invocation before the meeting began. And I got to just stand up there and say, you know, Christ is Lord and he is the King over all nations. And was able to contradict a lot of what he had said. And that's an opportunity that was so easy. I mean, it was just such a low hanging fruit.
Baptists have always been a creedal and confessional people. B.H. Carroll, the founder of Southwestern Seminary, said, "A church of a little creed is a little church." Here at Founders Ministries, we're concerned to help churches and church leaders come to understand our doctrinal heritage, our biblical foundation, in every way that we can. And so to that end, we have published a book called The Baptist Standards. In it, we have compiled different creeds from the ecumenical councils, together with some wonderful Baptist confessions and catechisms, all in one book. This book is a treasure trove of helpful resources, and Tom Nettles is the one who's written the introduction to it and who introduces every one of the confessions and the creeds that it contains. I encourage you to get a copy of this and make it available to all of the members of your churches or anybody who wants to understand who Baptists really are, where we have come from, and what our heritage is. You can get a copy of this at founderspress.org.
Scripture teaches that the body of Christ works best when each member is doing what they're gifted to do. My calling is to shepherd, to teach, and to have conversations that point people to Jesus. But producing and distributing a podcast takes a completely different set of skills. That's where Yonder Child comes in. They built and installed this studio that I'm in right now, and they manage the whole operation. Remote producing, keeping everything reliable, editing, and distributing the finished content across the channels that matter. And what I appreciate the most is this, whether it's a simple in-home micro studio for one host or a larger studio setup like we have here, Yonder Child can build it and manage it end to end so your team isn't buried in tech and your content stays consistent. They're using their gifts so I can focus on mine. It's consistent, polished content without the tech headaches. And that's what it looks like when each part does its work. If your organization could benefit from a partnership like this, you can email us at podcast@founders.org and we'll personally connect you with Yonder Child.
And in 1 Timothy 2, you know, when it says we're to pray for kings and all those in authority, that's a command, it's not a suggestion. And then if I talk to many pastors, hey, do you know your mayor's name or anybody on your city council's name? Are you praying for them? Are you obeying 1 Timothy 2? And most of them are not. And then the next question, you know, if they do know them, hey, do you know what to actually pray for them? Do you know them? How could I pray for you if I don't know what to pray for, you know? And so developing those relationships, I think, is integral to even obeying so much of the scripture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's such a symptom of modernity when we think about politics and we think about the civil magistrates and we think about all those things that are really important and the things then that we care about and that we're passionate about politically are all the things that are like way out there.
Yeah.
You know, federal politics, national politics, even state politics. But the stuff that's in my backyard, you know, my county commissioner meetings, my city council meetings, my HOA, whatever it is, like those things, I could not be bothered to even think about those things, even though I actually have some real power to do something about what's going on there. We care about, we put all our affections on the things that are way out there, and we don't give any time and attention or affection to the things that are near to me that I really ought to be thinking about, that I really can do something about. And I think the church does that often as well.
I think so too. I think the Lord in his providence, perhaps in the United States, used the COVID-19 craziness as a way of maybe reminding some pastors, because it certainly, I think in a very tangible way that maybe we had lost in decades prior. It just felt different being a pastor in Florida, for instance, than being a pastor in some other states. And so I think I saw across the board a lot of pastors where the light bulb went off, where it was like, oh, hey, as things get closer, as these lesser magistrates start being the ones that are really driving what my people are doing and what my church is doing, oh, it's not this hodgepodge of national politics. Local politics is where the game is at.
Yeah, and Seth, do you think, as one thinks about politics, do you think a person, an individual, and a church has a greater duty and responsibility to be involved in politics the closer it gets to that church or to that individual? Or do you think that the the Christian in the United States has just as much duty and responsibility when it comes to national politics as they do to local politics?
Yeah, I love that. It's really the doctrine of subsidiarity, right? Yeah. So it matters way more who your sheriff is than it is who the president is. And you saw in COVID-19 where even some governors of states were saying, hey, you have to shut your businesses down. And then the state police saying, kick rocks. And the doctrinal lesser magistrates really did come in play there, where in the doctrine of interposition, when the higher ranking authority makes unjust or arbitrary laws or rules, it's the duty of the lesser ranking authority to interpose and stand in the gap. So, yeah, it matters way more what's going on locally than it does even nationally. And the most of the national conversation is just a cop out from getting involved locally, unfortunately, because we're always looking for an excuse. Everybody wants to be a hero, but nobody wants to help mom with the dishes, right? We're always looking for an excuse to, get out of the work in my own home, let alone the work out there. And then it's easier to complain about them because I'm not accountable to that. And it really speaks to so many of the lies that we believe and we bought that keeps us out of this battle and duty. I mean, it's a command in Matthew, the cultural mandate to teach the nations to obey all that I've commanded you, right? But we've bought a lot of lies that keep us out of it. And I think of that Mark Twain quote, it's easier to deceive someone than to convince them that they have been deceived. It's easier to fool someone than to convince them that they've been fooled, because then our pride steps in and we'd rather be lied to. We'd rather be deceived. That's why it's such a sin, because the scripture always says, do not be deceived. I think of the sacred secular dichotomy that keeps churches out, right? My church is sacred. Politics is secular. But what does polis even mean? Polis is Greek for city. It's the business of the city. And it's God who establishes governments. And then you think of the lie of, what people believe about Romans 13, we're to submit to the king, obey Caesar. But we don't live in first century Rome, right? Who is the king in America? Well, it's we, the people, are the king in America. So if Caesar, the ruler, is told by a law-breaking tyrant that's trying to play tyrant to disobey God's command, what is Caesar's duty as the king? What is we, the people's duty as the king when someone who is supposed to be our civil servant tells us to disobey God? Well, it's our duty as the king to depose the evildoer and replace him with better counselors or civil servants. Caesar would be in sin if he did not be faithful to his responsibility and duty to rule by cowardly hiding behind someone else who stole his throne. And that's what we're seeing right now is Christians are abdicating their duty and allowing the devil to steal their throne, just like their father Adam and Eve.
Yeah, I do think it's helpful to think of civil magistrates and civil servants as another type of ministry. And this is what Paul calls them. Yeah. He says they are God's ministers for your good. And so, often when we think of ministry, like a vocation from God, a calling from God to serve in ministry, we just typically, that's the pastorate. If I'm going to serve in ministry, that's the pastor. There's another kind of ministry, right? There's a long tradition in the Reformed tradition of the two kingdoms of the civil magistrate and of the church. And the way that you break down, there's a lot of discussion on that. Which of the two kingdoms are, what falls under their jurisdiction? But even so, you have God's servants who govern and administer word and sacrament in the church, and then you have God's servants, God's ministers, who administer the sword in the state. And, you know, according to our confession in 1689, you know, we're not Anabaptists. Christians can and really ought to serve in those ministries of state. And I think a lot of Christians today kind of have it backwards. They think, well, the church is not to be engaged in politics, in that they are to be directing policies and legislating and telling people you have to do this or you have to do that because my religion says that you have to. Okay, fine. You grant all that. The church institutionally has its particular job of proclaiming the word, proclaiming the gospel, administering the sacraments, keeping God's people safe and sound within the walls of the church. That's the church's primary function and responsibility. But the individual members of those churches, those Christians themselves, just because they are a part of the universal church does not mean that they should not be involved in the ministry of the state as well. And I think that's where sometimes where we get it confused. And as a church has members who are seeking to be involved in that ministry of state, well, the church has a responsibility to teach them and to train them on how they are to do that. What do the scriptures say about this? What's just, what's right, what's evil? And then also the church has the ability, and I think the freedom, to mobilize its own people to oppose that which is wicked and to praise that which is good, particularly in their own localities, in their own local counties and cities as well.
The gospel-centered movement tried to make everything a gospel issue. But the fact is, not everything is a gospel issue. Some things are issues of God's law, because the God who gave us the gospel also gave us his law. And he loves his law as much as he loves his gospel. And if you're not straight on God's law and God's gospel, you will not understand the Bible the way that you ought to. That is why Founders Ministries is scheduling another conference on God's law and God's gospel. We hope that you will join us in 2027, January the 21st through the 23rd, here in Southwest Florida, as we delve into this most vital of all biblical doctrines.
There are few mercies greater than sacred spaces set apart for the soul's refreshment. At Lake Yale Baptist Conference Center, pastors find rest through sabbaticals, youth and children grow through camps, and churches gather for ministry events that strengthen the body of Christ. In a world full of noise, Lake Yale creates space to connect with God, with others, and with the mission. Lake Yale Baptist Conference Center. Connect here. Learn more at lybcc.com. That's lybcc.com. So what would you say about, or how would you encourage Christians to be involved locally in their own politics?
That's a good question. Well, yeah, I agree with everything you said there. It's that was awesome, man. But that's the thing is too, they're already involved, you know? But the sad thing is that, the law of tacit admission, you know, really silence equaling consent, their uninvolvement is actually giving consent to what's going on, you know? The question is not, whether the Christian will influence the culture or not. The question is, how will they? And their inactivity is influencing it for even more evil. You know, the bystander effect comes into place here. And the scripture's so clear on this, right? There's the sin of omission James talks about, that if you know to do something and you do it not, to you it is sin. And you think of Leviticus 20, right? Any Israelite who sacrifices their child to Molech shall be put to death. But then if a member of the community closes their eyes when a man sacrifices to Molech, God also holds him accountable too. In Acts 22, when Paul, you know, he says he's guilty of Stephen's blood, but he didn't throw a rock. He stood by silent while it was being done. And in Numbers 20, you know, Aaron's punished for Moses hitting a rock because Aaron didn't say anything. Numbers 30 is all about that silence equals consent. And we still hold to that, really, speak now or forever hold your peace. I think of Proverbs 24 that says, rescue those being led away to death. And then it says, if you say we knew nothing about this, does not he who hold your heart know it? And will he not repay each one according to what he has done? So one, it's really showing that, hey, church, your silence is giving consent to everything that's going on in your city and in your county. And so really seeing our duty that if we would if we would just continue the way that we're doing, and that's hands off, God will still hold us accountable for what's going on. But I think about in Florida too, right? We have close to 51 abortion clinics open and doing business in the state of Florida. That's more than every major red state almost combined. Every 8 minutes, a baby is murdered in the state of Florida. And where is the church? And so that's the same thing. How to get them involved? Just show up. That's how I used to be the just preach the gospel pastor. And, you know, I wouldn't get involved in anything until Frank Campana took me to my first abortion clinic. And I stood on the sidewalk there and saw that ideas have consequences and bad ideas have victims. And I saw these mothers walking in fully knowing what they're doing and almost celebrating killing their child, and then saying, hey, what are we doing as a church? All of this is happening under our watch. And it was Francis Schaeffer, I think, who said that outside of every abortion clinic should read a sign opened by their permission of the local church. So how do you get involved? You know, everything runs on relationships. So just develop, get to know your mayor, get to know your city council, get to know your fire chief, your police chief, show up to the county commissions, send an email. And if you're worried and scared, in the state of Florida, I'd love to help you out. And nationally, I'd love to connect you with more people to help you out. And that's really my goal right now, is to start faith in action ministries inside local churches, because we have youth ministry, we have, soup kitchens, but we don't have a ministry specifically for the public square that's involved in open air evangelism or door to door evangelism or ministry at sidewalk counseling or ministry to magistrates, knowing what's going on in city councils, county commissions. So I first put this to practice in Brevard County. There was this Pride Festival going on that was bringing in close to 25,000 people, and they were seeking to get our tax funds to help sponsor the grooming of children in my county. And so I was like, no, thank you. So I got to work calling all the churches in Brevard County saying, hey, the county commission is going to be voting on this. I need you all to show up. And I wrote an email out for all of them to send. And I wrote even templates for them to speak at the city council meeting. And so it turned out that, you know, about five churches sent these emails out, and just those letters changed the county commission's mind on the thing. And then we all showed up at there's like 60 people that showed up at the county commission meeting, and we all showed up to speak on this issue. But before we even spoke, they had already decided to defund this Pride organization and give all the tourism tax to lifeguards, you know. And not only did they defund the Pride, they defunded all the extracurriculars. So the symphony orchestra, the ballet, you know, all got defunded because of these Christians who stood up. But, you know, just one thing can really change. And I think of how many children were saved from being exposed to such, you know, such stuff in the public square. And then really just voting is hard enough. Was it 2020? Like 40% or something of the church was not even registered to vote or something like that. I got to look up the statistics again. But when I look at the different elections that are being won right now, some of them are in the single digits, you know, five votes, I think of in South Florida. And then so many people just aren't even showing up to vote. I think it was 9 to 17% in some of these local elections of people even turning out. So 10% of people are choosing the representation for 100% of the people. And if we obeyed in Exodus, right, in Exodus 18, that's where we're called, or really when there was judgment being done on the people, it wasn't good for Moses to do the stuff he was doing. So in Exodus 18:20, he says to teach them his decrees and instructions, show them the way they are to live and how they are to behave. And then in verse 21 in Exodus 18, it says to select capable men of all the people, men who fear the Lord, men who are trustworthy, who hate dishonest gain, and appoint them as officials over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. So, you know, find someone who is trustworthy, who hates dishonest gain, someone who fears the Lord, get behind them, door knock for them, vote for them, spread their name. You know, it's there's so many easy steps and easy on-ramps, and that's what we need to do as a church is help, help our congregations to vote their biblical values. Another thing that we can do, there's so many, with 501c3 things going on, Johnson Amendment, there's so many things that the church can do, hosting town halls or just getting candidate forums going on in the church, just so that people can be educated and equipped on how to vote. And Citizens Defending Freedom, Liberty Council have some great things on showing the do's and don'ts of that a church can be involved in, but not one church has lost their tax exempt status in all that they do. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of us in the Black Robe Regiment, we intentionally endorse candidates and send our sermons to the IRS saying, give us a reason, you know, to get rid of the Johnson Amendment now and forever, because it's against our Constitution completely.
Mm. Yeah. So, you know, as we think about local churches in localities and different members of those churches, you know, I know of some, you know, like our friend Dusty Devers, who's a pastor of a local church and has been involved in state politics. So, but it's not just pastors that should be involved. I mean, oftentimes pastors do have their hands full. They got more than enough work to do in the ministry that the Lord's given them. But there are others in the congregation that perhaps have the aptitude and the ability and perhaps even the relationships to run for office. And so I would encourage any pastors, any Christians out there, just to think honestly about this. You know, are there people in your congregation? Are you yourself in a position where you could run? But not just that, I think there are so many that are just ignorant of what's going on locally. We're in the middle of a midterm election year right now, and I think so many are ignorant of who's even running in their district, who's running for county commissioner, what's the name of their mayor. We were just at the Southern Baptist Convention, and what's his name?
Don Currence.
Yeah, Don Currence is the mayor of his town, and he said from the convention platform, he said, probably more people know in this room that I'm the mayor of my town than people in my town know that I'm the mayor of my town. And I'm sure that that's true in so many places. But it's important because, you know, for instance, I think about the proclamation that our county put out last week that we were able to receive. And it's a righteous proclamation that extols the importance of the natural nuclear family that, you know, in the month of June, right? And I made a point to highlight that in my speech as I received it. In the month of June, where so much sexual degeneracy and sin has been celebrated for so long in our nation, our county and so many different localities in our state has decided that this is the month of faith, family, and responsible fatherhood. So that's a righteous thing. And I think the church has a responsibility to praise our civil servants and magistrates when they do that, which is righteous. But also on the flip side, how often have our counties and our cities and our states done that which is wicked,
yeah,
and made wicked proclamations celebrating homosexuality or any other thing? And we just kind of, like, they're making statements on behalf of us. And sometimes they're legislating on behalf of us. And they are giving our tax funds to wicked causes on our behalf. And the church just kind of stands by and says, we shouldn't be involved in that. But, you know, I'll get out and I'll vote for Donald Trump or whoever it is because I really, really care about this big thing on the national level. And be involved in that. You know, national politics is definitely important, but not as important to you and to your family and to your children and your church as local politics is. Proverbs 29:2 says that when the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice, but when the wicked rule, the people groan. I mean, do you want your neighbors to be rejoicing? Do you want your fellow church members to rejoice? Well, ensure that there are righteous people in authority. And sometimes that's going to look like you being the one in authority, or your brother or sister in the congregation stepping up and saying, yeah, I can run here. I can take the seat. Like you said, I mean, so many different seats people run unopposed, and wicked people run unopposed and get into places of authority. Mm-hmm. I mean, how benefited, how blessed would our people be if we just had somebody there to oppose? Even if they didn't win, at least they're holding the Overton window.
That's right.
At least they're saying, you know, you may be wicked and you may be running on a wicked platform, but you're not going to do it unopposed, and we will be nipping at your heels the whole way.
One of the great encouragements of my life is to see how the 1689 Second London Baptist Confession of Faith has grown in influence over the years. When I was a seminary student, this confession was hardly even known at what was then the largest Baptist seminary in the world. Founders Ministries has been diligent in trying to make this confession known and make it readily accessible to more and more pastors and Baptist churches. To contribute to that effort, Joey Tomlinson, a pastor himself, has written a series of reflections on this confession of faith. Those Things Most Surely Believed is the title of this book of devotions of the 1689 Confession. In it, Joey takes 84 chapters and addresses the various parts of all the 26 chapters of the Confession of Faith. I encourage you to get a copy of this, to use it in your own family devotions, in your own private devotions, or in your churches through various Bible studies. It's a wonderful tool that will serve God's people very well. You can get a copy of it at founderspress.org.
IVF is often hailed as a triumph of modern medicine, a compassionate solution for couples longing for a child. But beneath its promise lies a host of profound moral, theological, and ethical concerns that many Christians have never carefully considered. In his new book, Misconceiving IVF, An Essential Guide to the Perils of In Vitro Fertilization, Pastor Josh Holler provides a compassionate yet uncompromising exploration of IVF through a distinctly biblical lens. Drawing from scripture, ethical reasoning, and pastoral experience, this book aims not to condemn, but to shepherd, helping Christians think faithfully, act wisely, and find hope in the God who opens and closes the womb. Whether you are wrestling with infertility yourself, counseling those who are, or seeking to understand the moral landscape of reproductive technologies, this book offers the biblical clarity and compassionate truth our age so desperately needs. You can order your copy today at founderspress.org.
Yeah, there's a shallowness in a lot of evangelical thought, which is the command to love our neighbor, the pattern of seeking the good of the place where we are during this earthly sojourn, that is exclusively the individual conversion of sinners. And certainly the gospel is every person's greatest need. But I don't think we get off the hook. The command to love our neighbor by saying, I'm indifferent to wickedness being celebrated and promoted and legislated, and I'm indifferent to good being outlawed. I don't think we get off the hook from the command to love our neighbor by saying, but I left a gospel tract, with my tip when I go out to eat. So I'm all good. Like there's a broader vision of what it means to be salt and light.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think we also miss...
And I don't think we...
Go ahead, Seth.
Yep.
Yeah, we miss it too, because these aren't just ideas. These are affecting actual people's lives. Dusty Devers, a righteous man who stood for equal protection and equal justice, got primaried out by 300-something votes. That's one church worth of people could have voted for Dusty Devers to uphold righteousness in their state, but instead... The cowards stay home and then allowed the devil to take charge of everything else. I'm not saying that the person who won is the devil, but if you're seeing what I'm talking about, our inactivity in this public square affects people's lives, affects people, like life and death issues are on the line here. And that's why the proclamations were so important, because it's going back to our roots, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that,
go ahead.
I think that there's this line from Aristotle's Ethics that I was going to mention in my speech. I cut it out just for sake of time. But Aristotle says that the civil magistrates make their citizens good by habituation. And that is their aim as civil magistrates. And we miss the importance of the law and the church's responsibility to proclaim the law when we just focus just on gospel. We just want to see people saved. And we look at our society and how crazy it is, and we say the only solution to this is the gospel. And I don't want to downplay that, and I think it's so important. Unless men have transformed natures, They're not going to do that which is righteous. But what is the definition of that which is righteous? That which is according to God's law. And when we proclaim God's law, and when the civil magistrate legislates and proclaims on the basis of God's law as well, what are they doing? They're doing what Aristotle says, who, you know, didn't have God's written law, though he had his natural law. They're making their citizens good by habituation. They're saying, as you said earlier, Seth, this is what is righteous, and this is what you are to do, this is what you are to be, this is what you are to believe. And so when counties and cities and states make these kinds of proclamations, they are training their citizens in virtue or vice. Mm-hmm. They're training their citizens in what is righteous or that which is wicked. And in so many ways, the civil magistrate in the laws that they enforce, the laws that they make, the proclamations that they send out, those things, we may think that it's unimportant. Who cares what a county commission says about this thing or that thing? Who cares what a city says about this thing or that thing? Or what it doesn't have any legal force. It does matter. It's habituating the citizenry in what is good or what is evil. And so the church needs to be about that. And when righteous people are in authority, they are basing those proclamations and those laws and enforcing those laws based upon God's very law of what is righteous.
That's right. The 24th chapter of the Second London Confession speaks of wholesome laws. Mm-hmm. And I recently did some research on this. In the 17th century context, wholesome meant that which tends towards the health of something. Mm-hmm. Right. So the idea is wholesome laws is not just, laws we like or laws we agree with or laws that everyone democratically agrees and therefore becomes law. It's those things which tend towards the good of the polis. It's those things, you know, just like, vegetables tend towards the health of the body and a milkshake does not. Mm-hmm. Laws that are based on God's moral law are actually good mm-hmm. for people. They tend towards human good and human flourishing. And those are the types of laws that the confession says a magistrate ought to be enforcing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's for our good and it trains us in good. And Seth, you were mentioning something about the history, our history and how we've done this in the past.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, your points are right on too. You know, every law is a catechism. And the question isn't, will we impose morality or not, but whose morality we will impose and which lawgiver we will submit and bow to. And that's really what our founding fathers did. And before that, even in 1607, I think of the first landing with Robert Hunt landed and they made a covenant. Our nation was founded on covenants, and his covenant said, we do hereby dedicate this land and ourselves to reach the people within these shores with the gospel of Jesus Christ and to raise up godly generations after us. And with these generations, take the kingdom of God to all the earth. May this covenant of dedication remain to all generations as long as this earth remains. And may this land, along with England, be evangelists to the world. May all who see this cross remember that what we have done here, and may those who come here to inhabit join us in this covenant and in this most noble work, that the Holy Scriptures may be fulfilled. That was the first landing here in America by Reverend Robert Hunt. And our Mayflower Compact echoes that as well, for the advancement of the Christian faith is why they landed here and undertook that mission. Mm-hmm. And so these proclamations are just hearkening back here in America 250 on what our nation was founded upon, Christian biblical principles, the gospel, not just to save our souls, but also to be at work in every area of life, according to 1 Corinthians 10:31, even down to what we eat and drink, which some Baptists could use some sermons on gluttony, you know?
yeah, no doubt.
He's Lord over it all. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, and speaking of, you know, I just want to plug this book that Founders Ministries has come out with recently by James Baird, King of Kings. It's a reformed guide to Christian government, and it gives a good biblical and historical basis for a lot of the things that we've been talking about, not necessarily from the local level, but it certainly all applies to that local level as well. And then also, we'll link in the show notes to the text of my speech that I gave when receiving the proclamation from Lee County, and then also a video of that as well. If you just kind of want a template for what it can look like as you get involved in some of these things as well. Seth, where can people find the work that you're doing? How can they get in touch with you if they want to be involved locally in politics?
Awesome. You can go to citizensdefendingfreedom.com. And we also have, I know you have your conference coming up. We have a conference coming up August 27th to the 29th, which is all about these things, how to practically get engaged in the grassroots level. It's practical trainings and then practical action steps in order to get your church to start Faith and Action Ministries too. That's the Armor Up Pastor Conference. You can find that at citizensdefendingfreedom.com.
Awesome.
Yeah, right now
it's for two nights stay, four meals for husband and wife really to go and just get refreshed and equipped down here at Lake Mary, Florida at the Marriott here. Mm. So yeah, citizensdefendingfreedom.com. Reach out there and you'll find one of our reps. And I'd love to help you out. If you're a local church in Florida or even nationally, you know, reach out to me and I'd love to help you get involved and take the first step in the public square.
Excellent. Excellent. And David, you wrote a book on the law.
I did.
And how it trains people in virtue. What is that book?
The book is called The Law for the Lawless. And it is a book about the Reformed second use of God's moral law, which is restraining evil in society, which is really the role of government.
Okay, and where can people find that book?
They can find that book at founders.org or wherever great books are sold, which is to say founders.org.
That's right. And where else can people find your work? Where do you write? Where are you online?
Yeah, you can find me on X at Dave Mitt, DaveMitz, and you can also find some of my writings at davidmitzenmacher.com, and you're going to have to go on the show notes for that because I'm not spelling my last name.
Well, thank you, David. And thank you, Seth, as well for joining us and having this conversation today. I think it's been helpful for me. I hope it's been helpful for you as well, listeners. And thank you for joining us. If it has been helpful, you can like and subscribe on the different platforms that you listen to or watch your podcast. And you can also share it with your friends as well. We'd love to see more people involved in local politics for God's glory. And we will see you all next time.